Welcome to Career Tools. This week, I am a people person. Part one. The questions discussed answers are, how do I get ahead if I am a people person? What are the downsides of being a people person? And what should I look out for if I'm a people person?
I'm super excited to be letting our listening audience know today that we now have the ability to deliver our virtual effective manager and virtual effective hiring manager training in languages other than English. We've partnered with an interpretation company who does real-time interpretation while the Manager Tools presenter presents our guidance. If you're interested in learning more about whether or not we can deliver to you the training in your language of choice, go ahead and send Maggie an email. Her email address, maggie@manager-tools.com.
There is so much advice out there if you're not a people person.
Like, don't these, I know it?
Right? There's all this.
I'm not a people person, so I can find it everywhere.
Right? And me. There's all these articles, and we've even got a podcast about it. I'm not a people person. I was thinking about that, and I thought, well, what a hold on. Are all the people perfect? Do they not need advice?
Because exactly,
they're perfect, right?
They've already got this figured out.
And actually, that outgoing group, the ones who thrive in group settings, they have their own work challenges.
They do. They're different, but they have them.
And they need to cultivate adaptability, to learn to work on their own and move forward when there isn't consensus, which they'd much rather have. So we're going to talk about those things and what the people need to learn.
You bet. All right. So our outline for today, cultivate adaptability, work on your own, focus on the detail, consider how other people work and think before you propose action, and consensus isn't necessary. So starting with cultivate adaptability. You mentioned this one already, Wendy, in that this is something that people-focused individuals tend to need to work a little bit on. So if you are congratulating yourself on not being one of those people who are ridiculed due to lack of people skills, inability to communicate, failure to build and maintain relationships, thinking that everything it took to be successful at work were things you naturally possessed, think again. We're so sorry to burst your bubble. We're so sorry you thought you were out of our scope. Oh, friends, you are not. Success doesn't depend on whether you're a people person or not. It depends on your adaptability.
And there's a cast for that where we go into it. But we're going to talk about it a bit now because half of the people in the world are not like you. If everybody in the world was like you, a people person, then you'd be fine. Absolutely. But the problem is half of the people aren't like you. And that's where adaptability comes in. So we use Empty Disk to look at the ways people behave and as an instrument to sort of describe the ways people behave and communicate that so that we can describe it. And the way people fall into Empty Disk is the high I's and the high S's, and they are people focused. They want to have a human-to-human connection before they get to a task. So if you sit down in their office, before you get to work with them, they will talk to you about what's going on in their day. They'll ask about your weekend, all of that stuff, before any of the work gets done.
Exactly. Other people might skip those pleasantries. And when those of us who are more task-focused skip those pleasantries for a people-focused individual, the people-focused person throughout the course of the discussion is thinking, well, how is this other person? Rather than listening to the task-focused information that's being shared, right? As a people-focused person, you think less of groups and more of individuals. That and people-focused persons are better at remembering individuals' names, using people's names in a conversation or when speaking to or about that person. And people-focused persons experience the world as having an effect on them, on you, that is, how it makes you feel, rather than using what you think to change how you behave in the world. It's all about feeling.
And 50% of the people in the world are not having that experience.
No.
It's not that they don't care about people. It's that they want to get the tasks done before they think of the people.
Yeah.
So in other words, if you go into their office, they're thinking, okay, before I ask about your weekend, I need to get whatever it is off my plate. Whatever that task is, I need to check it off, because otherwise I'm going to worry about that all the time when we're talking about your weekend. That's the first clue that someone is task focused, is that they get straight down to business. Because if in their mind, getting the work done comes first. And task-focused people usually use the word think rather than feel. They'll say, I think the team is struggling, not I feel like the team is struggling.
Yeah.
And obviously, you can't judge based on one sentence. That's, you know.
Right. It's more than that, but that's a good indicator.
Yeah. And everyone has preferences, but you can make judgments based on the preponderance. So if you work with someone, if there's someone in your team who nearly always wants to get down to work before they ask about your weekend, who nearly always uses the word think rather than feel, then you know. And the other thing about task-focused people is the opposite to you. They don't remember people and their names, but they do remember numbers. A high C, for example, the opposite, a task-focused person will tell you how many people were at the meeting, but he won't tell you who they were. So we'll say, here, there were 10 people there.
Yeah.
But he won't tell you who those people were.
Right. Or might even use like a job title, job roles, mm-hmm. especially in larger organizations, not individual people's names. So these things, these behavioral characteristics about individuals, helps you to recognize the preferences of those people around you. And in turn, it helps you to adapt your own behaviors so that you can be more successful with other people. It's kind of regardless of their preferences or your preferences. If you're more aware of the other person's preferences and you can adapt, you'll be far more successful in your relationships. In this case, far more successful in your relationships with the 50% of the task-focused world, or the 50% of the world who is task-focused, I suppose, the 50% of the world that is task-focused and doesn't think of the world the way you do. If you can understand those people's perspective, instead of acting the way you usually would, you naturally would, you can instead act as they would. So for example, instead of walking into someone's office and starting a chit-chat, a story about your weekend, asking about their kids, instead, go straight to the work. Hey, where are we on the project? And save your own story, your conversation of the weekend, talking about the kids, still have the conversation after the work is done. And if you try this, just try it once and see what happens, right? See how that meeting goes. See how it changes the dynamic of the remainder of that conversation.
It's amazing how differently people experience things, especially high I's who are assertive. And so they tend to be louder and bigger in their movements. And they are experienced by the other half of the world as very bombastic and bull in a china shop, whereas they think of themselves as enthusiastic. The reserved people are thinking, oh my gosh, that person's like a hurricane. Yeah, coming into my office. Exactly.
There's so much energy.
Yeah. It's like they feel run over by you. Yeah. So success takes three things, right? The knowledge of your own preferences, the ability to look at someone else and establish what their preferences are, and then being able to adapt your actions or behaviors to what's required. And the first two are easy. Working out what your preferences are is easy. And if you can't work it out, we have the empty disc profile, which you can take on the website and take you 20 minutes and you'll know. The second one is relatively easy. You can look at other people's behaviors and you can work out which quadrant they fall into. And the third is what most people miss, which is why we call it the magic variable, which is adapting your behaviors to other people's preferences.
That's exactly it. Adaptability is the skill that allows you to connect with anyone, no matter their profile, and to work successfully in any role, regardless of the requirements of that role. So someone who is on the extremes of the people-person continuum is not less likely to be in a job devoid of people as long as they know they're able to adapt to it, right? And evidence shows that those individuals who are successful are the individuals who are best adapted to their environment as opposed to people who are most naturally suited for the environment. So as long as you have that awareness of, I'm going to say, your strengths and your weaknesses as it pertains to the task, the skill, your relationships, etc., as long as you're aware of it and you're doing something to change your behaviors for the better, you can be just as successful as someone who's naturally, if not more successful, as someone who's naturally prone to those types of behaviors.
And we all have things, strengths and weaknesses. You have to have
it. You have to.
Right? If all of us have 100 things, 50 of them have to be weaknesses. It's just math, apparently, they tell me. I don't do
math. What is that thing that you shared recently, Wendy? Oh, I want to say you put this in a newsletter recently. Why do you think all pencils have erasers?
Oh, yes, because people make mistakes.
Because all the people make a mistake. Now, unless it's an IKEA pencil or a golf pencil, in which case they're expecting you to use it one time and throw it out. I mean, it's a disposable pencil. Any pencil you're going to use for any period of time has an eraser because we all make mistakes.
I love that. There's somebody told me that and I stole it because it was so good.
Yeah. Oh, it's genius. I love it.
Yeah. And adaptability doesn't mean only ever doing the things you would prefer to do or not to do in the ways you wouldn't prefer to do them, right? It doesn't mean only ever doing things that other people want you to do. It means finding jobs and activities that use your strengths and using your strengths to get them done. It doesn't mean like forcing yourself into a weird shape because that's the way it should be done. It's a combination of moving towards other people's preferences where that will be helpful,
yeah,
and also using your own strengths where that will be helpful too. You can usually do both in most jobs.
Yeah, exactly. So let's do an example. So onboarding a new team member. Now, onboarding a new team member is a great task for people persons. People persons genuinely care to get to know someone new. Now, the creating a spreadsheet of onboarding tasks, that probably isn't the natural skill set of the people person. So what you could do, for instance, is split the task. As a people person, you could pair up with another person in your organization who is more task-focused or more detail-oriented and probably not a people person, and have that person work on the spreadsheet and you take on the onboarding of it. Or you could use some other tricks for detailed work to help you be more successful at it. It's also possible that the new team member, the person you are onboarding, isn't a people-focused person either. And another task-focused team member might be a better fit for onboarding them just generally. Maybe your natural people skills aren't the best suited for this situation at all.
Can you imagine being a not people person and spending the first week with someone that you find overwhelming and effervescent and bombastic and just you're trying to take in everything about a new job and a new company, and it's all overwhelming by someone who you find too loud and too much as well.
Yeah. It's like drinking from a fire hose.
Exactly.
And starting a new job is drinking like a fire hose already.
Yeah.
But you're absolutely right. It adds a layer of additional, I want to say, complexity to trying to pick up a new role to begin with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So knowing people's preferences, or in our speak, knowing their empty disk profile, doesn't pigeonhole them.
Right.
It's not enough to know you're a people person or a higher I or a higher S to say that you'd be great as an onboarding task. Like, we can't say all higher I's should be doing onboarding because they'd be great at it. Because there's more to consider. There's the part of the task that considers listing out the onboarding tasks, which requires someone who's detail-oriented and someone who enjoys the part of process development.
Yeah.
Probably things that a high I doesn't like to do in most cases. But the preference of the person being onboarded, we've just discussed, that needs to be considered, as do the people that they'll be meeting as part of the onboarding process and working with. So no task is a single homogenous block that is preferred by all of one person, right?
Yeah.
There aren't high I tasks, which only high I's like to do, or high I's like to do the whole thing. Every task contains things you like and things you'll need to adapt to do well.
Mm-hmm, exactly. So adaptability, just the ability to have that flexibility of nature, is a skill unto its own.
Hey, everybody. I'd love to invite you to a virtual effective remote manager session, which we're hosting on Zoom on the 20th of November at 1 p.m. Eastern. It's going to be a small group, and I'm hosting it, and I'd love to have you come. We can give some personalized guidance for you and really help you understand what remote management means in your situation. So if you're interested in joining our Effective Remote Manager event, you can come to the event on the 20th of November. It starts at 1 p.m. Eastern, and learn how to be effective as a remote manager in your situation, in your environment, as it pertains specifically to you. If you'd like to stand up, please go to manager-tools.com/training.
So working on your own is a skill. And as a people person, you'd probably prefer that all of your work be a collaborative effort, right? That's generally people-focused persons. Let's do a brainstorm. Let's talk it out. Let's chat about it as a group. Let's meet. Mm-hmm. Let's meet and let's talk about it. As people-focused persons, you prefer to work in an office with other people around you. So you, I don't know, have somebody to bounce your ideas off of, right? As you're sitting at your desk doing something, you're shouting over your shoulder at like a colleague that's sitting down the way. Hey, I want to ask you something. You want to ask opinions of them, right? And as a people-focused person, you think, and you're not wrong, that better products come out of more minds being applied to a situation, right? More minds, more ideas, better product.
And however, whatever the environment you're in, to a greater or lesser degree, the rest of your team or your boss or the organization would prefer that you work on your own at least some of the time.
Yeah.
I used to work with
at least some of the time.
Work with one of those people who used to read the newspaper, and I knew what was happening. He used to say, "Have you read this?" And I was like, "No, I'm doing my work.
I'm working."
And then it would go on. It was like half an hour later. "Have you read this?" "No, I'm doing my work." And I knew what it was. He was excited and he wanted to share.
Yeah.
And I was just like, "No, I'm working." And part of work was knowing what was going on in business. So I had to read later. So, you know, I guess I could have looked at it then, but I was concentrating on something and I wanted to stay where I was in the spreadsheet or whatever I was looking at. It was just a different way of working, but just used to make me laugh. And I would prefer he read the paper on his own and we could talk about it later.
Right. You're like, sit down, shut up and do your work, social butterfly.
Yeah. Exactly.
It's kind of that, right? Yeah. It's like, okay, I know everything is cool and fun. Let's concentrate on our work for a minute.
Can we do the boring stuff?
And we see the world differently. Yeah, exactly. Can we do the boring stuff?
Yeah. And it's possible that your boss even is thinking that you're not capable of doing that work.
Yeah.
If you always are talking to someone about doing it, then you're not demonstrating that you can do it on your own.
Yeah.
That sounds a very childish way to put it. Like, if you can't show me you can do your shoes up on your own, then you can't do your shoes up on your own.
Right.
But really, if you never do your work on your own, then have you demonstrated that you can?
Mm-hmm.
A task-focused person like me might be getting frustrated at the interruptions or what they see as hand-holding. It's like, do I have to show you how to do this again? Or do we always have to do this together?
Uh-huh.
You know? The same activity is being looked at through two or three different sides of a prism and seen completely differently.
Yeah.
And what you see as a useful collaborative exercise, someone else sees as an immature imposition.
Mm-hmm.
And while we're on this note, just because I get to, you know, put some of my personal things out there, others do not necessarily agree with you that instant messenger and email is your personal entertainment machine.
Yeah.
Just saying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like the occasional, like, hey, good morning, guys, is great. But mm-hmm. a bunch of chit chat throughout the course of the day, again, to your point, Wendy, makes it appear as though, right or wrong, makes it appear as though you're not focusing on your work. Clearly, you have time to focus on chat or Slack or instant messenger of some sort. So all that said, what we'd ask or what we'd recommend you do is instead do the preparation work for any piece of work you're responsible for on your own first. And then, because you still want to meet with folks, and again, it helps add additional value to your ideas, then get together after you've done the initial work. Get together with other people and get agreement to move forward, right? Have their ideas added to what we would think of as kind of your first draft, right? So, for example, if you're creating a new process for getting approval for tech replacement, instead of getting everybody together to brainstorm steps and writing down the process on the fly, sit down, write down all of the steps you think or you imagine might exist on your own first. And again, inserting a little thing here, one secret to getting over blank page syndrome when there isn't anyone around to brainstorm with is to use the internet as your brainstorming tool, right? Google it, ask the internet a question, and it will be the second party in your conversation. It will help you to begin to have that creativity of ideas. You could even start with someone else's process for tech replacement, evergreening kind of stuff, and then use that, add your own stuff to it before you meet as a group.
That's a really good use for ChatGPT. Yeah. I don't think it existed when I wrote this like 3 weeks ago, but anyway. And then you can tweak it for your organization.
Exactly.
And then once you've done that preparation, once you've got a draft, then bring everyone together to review it and fill in any gaps. And this leverages the collective, the whole, the team, for the small part of the project. It still gives you the opportunity to work with everybody. And it gives you, it gives everybody else the opportunity to see what you've created before you get too far off the rails, if that's a problem.
Yep.
And it allows for a checkpoint for your boss or others to give their approval if that's a necessary thing. And then you do the next step on your own, and then you have that group discussion, approval, whatever you need, and so on and so forth.
Yeah. And speaking of approval, Wendy, in this case, during this sequence, you'd also want to balance the need for approval and the desire for validation, right? Mm-hmm. Do not tell yourself that you need to bring everyone together to get your boss's or your organization's approval just because you want somebody to tell you that you've done good work and you want to feel good about the work you've done. That's what your friends are for. That's what your colleagues are for. I mean, we all have that group of work friends, right? Mm-hmm. That we can show our things to them. And look at the great job I did. And they're like, oh my gosh, you did such a great job. Nice work. Go to those people. Again, this goes back to what you said a little bit earlier, Wendy, in that it's a little bit about perception, mm-hmm. not entirely about reality.
Yeah.
In some cases. Yeah. It's if your boss keeps seeing you, ooh, look at the thing I did. Look at the thing I did. Look at the thing I did. At some point, your boss or peers or colleagues or whomever is like, oh, great, you did another fancy thing. Mm-hmm. Do you need a reward for all the things you do?
Exactly.
Again, that's not your intent. We know that that's true. We know that's not your intent. However, it can feel that way to others. So show your fancy things to your friends, your work friends, your colleagues.
Yeah. And if you are a people person and very assertive, so what MTDisc would call a high I, you will need to tone down your enthusiasm for your ideas because you have a tendency to love, in capital letters, love every idea you hear and without thinking through the details of implementation.
This will revolutionize the way we do our jobs. Something can't revolutionize the way you do your job every month, gang.
No,
they can't.
Not every can't. Day.
But yeah, not every day.
High eyes tend to believe it every
right?
day.
You see the potential.
Revolutionizes one of your exactly. one of your favorite words.
I know, right? You see the potential in everything.
I have a friend who hates the way the word awesome has become so overused.
Yeah.
Because she
awesome
says,
"Awesome means
Wendy,
something.
Only the universe is awesome." Uh-huh. And high eyes tend to use awesome all the time because everything's awesome. And if everything's awesome, nothing is awesome.
Is your friend a high C?
Yes, she is.
Yes, I was going to say, because that's such a high C thing to say. Actually.
Actually, yeah. So the phrase "where angels fear to tread" was pretty much invented for high eyes. And not only does your enthusiasm get you in hot water sometimes because you can go rushing down a path that really you shouldn't have done, because if you'd have thought for 3 seconds, that's not a great idea. It's also off-putting for those that consider the details before taking action.
Yeah.
And there is a middle course between the two extremes. And understanding that yours is an extreme at one end will help you come to the middle where you can meet other people. Mm-hmm. If you know that, oh, I tend to love every idea the moment I hear it, and other people tend to think about all the ways it can go wrong before they say anything about an idea. Now, instead of wondering why someone hits you with a wet fish every time you tell them your idea, you think, okay, we're just coming at this from two entirely different attitudes.
Mm-hmm, exactly. It doesn't have to be one or the other. It can be a blend of both. Exactly. And in addition, as a people-focused person, if you've got a choice, work in environments where there are other people around you, even if those people aren't working with you. I mean, even if they're not colleagues of yours in a shared type workspace, right? Having other people around can help focus, in that people-focused people tend to be more, I'm going to say, disturbed by silence than they would be of the noise of other people working around them.
And all the task people focused, just went, what?
Right. Your minds just blew up a little bit. You're like, how is that even humanly possible? Silence is the best way to get my work done. But yeah, with people-focused people, they like to have that noise, right? That background, that hum of activity. So if you're a people-focused person and you're struggling to work at home, for example, you might do better in a co-working space, right? Or even virtually with a co-working service. So for example, I know Judy, who used to be on our team, she is a travel agent and she used to have a shared, it was Skype. Oh my gosh, this is the olden days now. We're talking about pre-Zoom technologies. It was just an open call on mute. Everyone is on mute. A bunch of other travel agents, so that they were kind of in that same room with one another. And there was that feeling of, because again, people focused person kind of goes back to feelings.
Yes.
There's that feeling of lack of solitude. Mm-hmm. It's that feeling like we're in the same room, even if we're not talking, even if there's no real noise going on, because we're all on this shared call together. It's like we're in the same place. And if it's like we're in the same place, it feels like we're in the same place. And it's less distracting due to sheer silence.
Yeah. It's weird, but it works.
Yeah. People-focused persons just like to know someone else is there.
Yeah. So we're giving you some things
weird
to think
about. Yeah. It's just weird. Unlike the way we think, right?
That's right. It's not fair, because it's just that you and I are on the other side. Yeah. We are the not people people. And,
right.
And it is as confounding to us that you would think the way you do as it is to you that anybody would think the way we do. And just knowing that people think in the opposite way and being able to at least understand that it's possible that people think the opposite way helps you know that they are not doing it on purpose, and they're not doing it to irritate you. They're not doing it because they want to be deliberately annoying or deliberately get in your way. For me, when I realized that took 90% of the aggravation out of those situations.
Oh, it just changes the game. You're like, oh, dang, okay, this ain't about me.
Exactly.
It's not about you. It's not about you. It's just a natural tendency that is so wildly different from your own natural tendency that you would never have come to it on your own.
Exactly. You'd never get there. So we've given you two things to think about this week. We'll be back next week with part 2.